You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Looks like you've been cooking on the stove. That'll be a bond deduction.
It's a room of one's own with Auckland renters advocate Celine on 95BFM.
What is up, Celine?
Oh, you know, not much. That opening is still funny because of how true it still is.
Oh, my God, I know. We're going to dive straight in with a text that's just come through from someone who says, kia ora, query re-renting rules around income. My property management won't let me sign a new tenancy due to my income not being 2.5 times the rent. Is this law?
I do not believe this is the law. No, there are privacy issues there with, and I know we often give more information than we think we're supposed to because we're trying to get a flat or trying to insure something, but the Privacy Commission has been looking into this, and I would just have a look online and make sure that you're not giving away more info than you need to. But they can't make decisions like that based on income.
No.
And they shouldn't.
Your money is your money to spend, you know.
Exactly. So if you're not paying rent, then that's a problem, but you are. And you're finding a way to do that, that's not their concern.
Yeah. Also, I'm sorry that your income is not more than 2.5 times your rent.
That's a big problem too.
That's cooked in a systemic way.
Yeah.
So I hope that that's able to help you at least a little bit with going back on that one there. It also sounds a little bit red flaggy, I'm not going to lie about that, as a relationship. So.
Yeah, it doesn't sound great. So calling, just calling the kind of official tenancy services line is a good idea because there's specific regulation around that, and they can kind of maybe help you work out that scenario there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like good practice.
Tenancy services is really good for that kind of thing because they can tell you exactly where in tenancy law it says the thing that you're concerned about. So go check them out. And then obviously, as we always have on this segment, we'll put all the links to the various actual tenants protection groups in the podcast after the show too. Let's get stuck into some other questions that we've had come in over the morning. We've got someone who wants to know about their house, which is up for sale. How much notice does our landlord have to give us if we're not going to be able to stay on with the new owners? Our current fixed term lease is up in a month, and we're worried that if they sell it before then, they won't have to give us any more time to sort ourselves out. And then lots of question marks. So what's going on here?
Yeah, well, this is one that I feel like my brain is not kicked into gear yet this Monday. So I can't off the top of my head remember the things around that are so sticky because that's why we're really encouraging people to try and get on rolling leases because that fixed term, we're not really clear, and I'm not clear today, on how that endpoint works. And often if they're incommunicado, then you're suddenly... are you moving out the next morning? It's hard to know, but I will follow up on that and we'll make sure we have a good answer for them. But it's a tricky situation to be in. You deserve to have some warning and know what's going on.
Oh, totally.
And it is difficult when there's sometimes an assumption that the next owner would be renting it as well.
Mm.
So I need to follow up on that because that's a really sticky point.
Yeah, we will come back to that one for you. I imagine that there'll be some protection in place at least so that you're not within a week booted out of your house. That feels like something at least hopefully our law has some protections
we would hope
on.
So, yeah, this is where I get stuck.
Okay, we'll come back to that one then. What else have we got here, Stella?
Well, we have some messed up mould in our flat and we'll probably have to take our landlord to the tribunal. It's been a whole saga, says someone. Every time I bring it up with my friends though, they all say I should just withhold rent. Is that a good idea?
I think if you're thinking about going to the tribunal, which you should, mould is bad, and I'm sure they're ready to take on a lot of cases at the moment, sadly, you want to be in the position where you can bring the best case, and so you want to be the perfect little tenant. So my advice would be to keep doing everything above board, so when you go into that scenario, you really look like the rightful party in terms of
the law.
Under the law, and then you will get reimbursed at that time, I'm sure. So there's you want it to be as clearly in your favor as possible that you haven't done anything wrong. My advice would be just to do that, to make them look as bad as possible and collect your evidence. So really get your receipts in order so you have everything you can bring for them. Take some photos, you know, get some I don't know, whatever you can do, any emails, get yourself ready and keep doing everything, because it's always about kind of that responsibility of the landlord, responsibility of the tenant. If you've upheld your responsibilities and they haven't, then you're in a better position.
Totally. Okay, sweet. We've got some first-year student here asking about halls of residence. They said, "Sup, I've just moved into a hall of residence and I wondered how tenancy law applies to us. Is it the same as being a tenant in an apartment building? I don't have any problems at the moment, lol. I'm just curious."
This is a really good question. And it actually is interesting. I looked it up. There's a few occasions in which the Tenancy Act doesn't cover, and this is one of them. So it's a different arrangement when it's things like halls of residence or student hostels, mm-hmm. and then a few other things like different kinds of residency arrangements. But so in these cases, the Act doesn't cover student accommodation. Instead, they want these accommodation providers to have this thing like house rules. And so the house rules have to be something that the student tenants know about and have access to. So I would say get yourself a copy of the house rules. The university is your provider, so I would be on alert and and be aware of their responsibility, especially as it's different and your relationship. Yep. And if there is a problem, your contestation is with them, is with your provider.
And who do you actually contact? So if you do end up having a problem, we're giving advice to people to like contact tenancy services, tenants protection, but who does this person or, first year students in general reach out to?
Yeah, and that's a really interesting one. And I'm not entirely sure. I'm sure they would have had calls from tenants protection. They will have a knowledge of other spaces you can go, but it might be more general, like it might be disputes tribunal, might be something else there, which is really a difficult one when you think about the number of students in this type of housing, especially when we have pandemic stuff and environmental event stuff. That is something I'll follow up on as well, because it's interesting to think about not having specific services where people can check. I would say make sure you and everyone else you know is aware of what those house rules are.
Yeah, totally.
And then you kind of know if the responsibilities are being upheld there.
Good to know. We've got a few more questions here. I think we will try and get through all of them. I reckon we've got time. We've got someone who wants to know how they get their flat checked to see if it's a red or yellow sticker. They've said they had bad flooding downstairs, but our landlord hasn't replied to my email asking about it. Feels gross and unsafe health-wise, but I'm not really sure what to do in the meantime. Any help much appreciated.
Yeah, that's not good, because when was the floods now? Like
bloody ages ago, mate.
Yeah, over a month ago. I'm lost in time a little bit at the moment, but that is too long. And again, thinking about how we set up all of this kind of tenancy protection is responsibilities of the tenant matching the responsibilities of the landlord. They're not upholding their responsibility. If they leave the country and aren't in communication with you, they need to appoint another person. So they can't just go... Well, especially the first thing they're supposed to be doing after this kind of event is checking in on their tenants and making sure your property is inhabitable. So if it's not, I would be calling tenancy services, asking them what the best first approach is, but something like the 14-day notice to remedy, and then you can say, well, they didn't reply, and then we sent them this, and then they didn't do anything, we can take them straight to the tribunal.
Right.
Because the main thing you need, I think, is that you need the house to be assessed, but we don't... It's really up to it's the landlord and you working out the repair, and they need to bring in professionals or kind of work out if the house is inhabitable or clean the flooding or dry the house. So the first thing is they need to be in contact with you. If you feel like it's not habitable, there's kind of, if you look up tenancy services, they have things on post natural disaster. And if it's really uninhabitable or partially uninhabitable, you can just end your lease and leave. But it depends if it's kind of just flood damage or you think it might be damage that stops you living there. If it feels unhealthy, I would try and stay with someone else and just really... I would call tenancy services. There might be a way where you can even alert the landlord more quickly than that. There might be a loophole to do with this environmental safety thing. But it's also, if it's to do with safety, they really need to act quicker. So there's some urgent repair details online. And if you're following that, they really need to get into action really quick, otherwise.
Yeah, nice. Okay, well, not nice. I mean, stink, but good advice. Yeah, get your health sussed first, you
Absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely.
Most important thing. We have had a follow-up question from another first-year student. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you'll know the answer to this one, Celine, but they've said that they're in halls of residence and they had their card taken off them by an RA. Are they allowed to do that?
Their what taken off them?
Their card. I presume that means their access
swipe
card?
Oh.
Swipe card?
Yeah. That doesn't really make sense to me. Like, for what reason? That doesn't feel...
Yeah.
That doesn't feel great. I think, again, if the RA is kind of employed by...
The Hall of Residence.
The Hall of Residence. It's like, surely...
Most Halls of Residence have some sort of manager or management.
Yes.
I would definitely bring that, if you're concerned about it, bring that to them, because that seems weird.
That does seem weird. Yeah, I don't think that should just be happening, and you'll have certain rights under those house rules. I'm sure they can't... I don't know, especially if they're thinking about that as, like, disciplinary or something, they'll be... That feels like just someone's action, which I'm sure doesn't stand.
Yeah. Sounds like there's probably going to be a simple solution to that one,
yeah.
But it might involve emailing management or finding out who's the boss of the bosses.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea.
I think that's probably all we've got time for this morning, Celine, but thank you so much for your support today. For anyone whose questions we haven't got to, keep them coming on 5395 and we'll try our best to get through them next time you're on. Cheers so much for your time.
No problem.
A plague on both your investment houses. That was A Room of One's Own with Auckland renters advocate Celine.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.